Hello, you. It's good to see you're still around. Welcome to the first Far Off Places podcast of 2014. We're sorry we've been rather quiet recently. It was quite cold and chilly and damp where we were, so we found that we had to hibernate for a bit. But the sun is out, the daffodils are beginning to bloom, and we're fairly sure it's spring. So we're back, and we're back with a vengeance. In the next week, Between the Leaves, our latest issue, is going to be appearing. It's in the press at the moment, and it's as tantalising as hot cakes with melted chocolate in the middle. It's really good. We're very proud of it. You should definitely get your hands on a copy. You can also hear some of the pieces published in issue 4 on Saturday coming, on the 1st of March. We're doing a joint new writing showcase with Octavius Magazine and From Glasgow to Saturn Journal. And some of the hottest new writers in Scotland are going to be there. Get yourselves there. It's going to be good. We've been told there might even be cake, so we're quite excited. Entry is free. That's in the Old Hairdressers in Glasgow at 2 p.m. And the week after that, we really are staying busy. We'll be on the road and going to St. Andrews for Stanza Poetry Festival. And we're particularly excited about this because we launched our very first issue at Stanza last year, so we'll be going back with our 4 published issues. We'll have a few very limited print editions, we'll have birthday cake, and we would love to meet you in person. So come along, say hi. We'll be at the Poets Market in St. Andrews on Saturday the 8th of March. There are lots of other exciting things too going on in the next month. Take a look at our blog to see all of them. We're really proud to be able to work with such talented and amazing and energetic writers who do 3 readings a week and somehow still find time to write. We're really impressed. So yeah, we're back on the road and we're pleased to be here. For now though, we're going to hear a piece from issue 3, Under the Bed. It's by one of our regular writers, Christina Wataszek, who always manages to astound us no matter what the theme of the magazine is. So this is a prose piece from issue 3, and it's called Pandora. Pandora. The mother wakes early, fumbling for her only pair of heels by the light of a cancerous moon. Glimpsing its boldness, she feels stifled, her chest tight with that old, rising swell. She tries to pry open the window, searching the dark for signs of rain, but it sticks, and she strains, making too much noise. The little face, a second moon, hangs in her doorway, wondering why. For a moment, she wants to take the child in her arms, rock her as she used to, place her face against her breast. The mother remembers when a word as little as air was spoken with 2 syllables and was thick with magic. Now the questions come fluent and fierce, swarming from the angry hive of her daughter's mouth. "I'm going to the early mass at the new church," the mother lies, flinching at the pleading that follows. "Maybe next time." Every no is a small agony. They are both wide awake now, and the mother slumps, shoulder blades ground into the wall. She feels she is always against some wall or other, always pinned to this dependency. A dark thought flutters by. Can't I ever be left alone? Sudden guilt bites hard, gnawing her down to sinew. She wonders, in an afterthought, if the daughter will be all right. But the landlady is just downstairs. She'll come to check on the girl if she isn't back in 30 minutes. It's been hours, the daughter thinks. She lifts herself, elbows kneading carpet. She holds herself in that strained, painful pose, her body tense as a hovering cobra as she peers into the box. A single box, under the old bowed box spring, under her shaking hands, her pride open eyes. It is the grey, mute hour just after dawn, and the mother is still gone. The daughter strains through shadow, ignoring the hair that has been nudged out of her ponytail by the press of the mattress, a soft ceiling to keep her secure. She unpockets her portable sun, squeezes out a little light. The mother speaks in a tense, black scrawl, a scar across the belly of time. Memories, the Adidas box is labelled, renamed like an orphan. The daughter wonders why. Why here, this squat, stray troll, all shoulders and mouth hidden in the dark? She closes her eyes, tries to curl against the door of her mother's mind, but is overwhelmed by her own yawning infancy. She nudges up the lid, wedges her arm behind her to toss it away. Inside the box, her life unfolds inversely, like a womb collapsing back. Photos glare up at her, the most recent first, blued with age like her grandmother's eyes, already going blind to the present. They are the daughter's school portraits, from third grade down to kindergarten, followed by a blurry blink at her preschool days. There she is with her old Tom, the unhappy cat pressed against her cheek, her hair curling over him like a doll's wig. Another reveals her first unsteady step as she grins at an oversized, apathetic teddy. There she is in a diaper, all dough and rolls, her hand startling the camera, two perfect, fleshy stars. She imagines she remembers that moment, reaching up for the winking toy in her mother's hands. The box grumbles as she nudges it, and she lays the pictures aside. There is a tiny plastic treasure chest with her first lost tooth rattling around inside, a tied-off curl, a heavy clay pot pinched into a shapeless, empty hope. A rolled-up drawing of two hangmen, one with an uneven skirt, their stick fingers entwined beneath the Crayola sun, and a curl of plastic with a hole-punched tail. This last the daughter turns over in her hand, seeing her mother's name printed out in squat, neat type, like the label on a prescription. The name is surrounded by midget words, abbreviations she can't sound out. She thinks of her mother in the hospital, of ugly black stitches holding her together, though she knows this image is only a memory of a nightmare. The mother tosses a plastic Frankenstein ring into the cup holder to discard later, and resumes digging through her purse for coins to feed to the toll basket. But the disfigured face on the ring glares up from her periphery. Her daughter had handed the ugly thing to her last Halloween, telling her solemnly, "This one looks like you, Mum." She glances over, noting the heavily hooded eyes, the sickly complexion beneath dark, spiked hair, the permanent frown. Oh God, she was right. The mother snatches up the ring suddenly and tosses it in along with her toll. The perforated basket, like a deformed colander left on a hot burner, swallows her gift whole. With a flicker of humour, she wonders if Frankenstein will grind in a gear, snap off some integral piece and keep her trapped behind that dead arm. But a little green eye flashes, and the barrier lifts. She fishes for a mint from her still bulging purse, lying like a spoilt pet on the passenger seat. Several silly bands and a quartz-flecked rock tumble out. The mother presses on the gas, scolding herself for saving too much. The daughter tips the box, disappointed by its empty heart. She'd thought there might be a second hospital bracelet to match, one with her own name and birth date on it. But there is nothing else. She tucks everything back in place, reaches for the lid. It flips as she fumbles it, revealing a large envelope taped to the underside. This her mother hasn't bothered to label. The daughter is careful, separating the envelope's lips, prying apart the sticky silence. The first, white voice, is a certificate of marriage. The mother greets the priest, He looks her over sadly, then juts his wasted chin towards the door. She follows as he shuffles through a kaleidoscope of light, the stained glass windows weeping over the creaking, cursing floor. He sweeps up a sunlit confetti of dust with his white gown, stepping as carefully as a woman on her wedding day. God's forever bride. In the little room in the corridor, her hands begin to shake. There is plenty of time. No one else waiting, and the priest settles in the little closet, indifferent as the moon. Still, she wonders, can I say what I must? Her brow creased and head lowered as she feigns reverence. With quick ambivalence, the daughter sets aside her parents' record of devotion. She has seen it before, knows her dad wishes to burn it. She slips a thumb into the envelope and pulls out another white whisper. The mother sucks in her breath as the little window whispers shut. She begins what she has practiced, the words like a script sounding awful, ineffectual as a birthday wish. Forgive me, Father. Wish I may, wish I might. Take it back. The daughter bites down on her squeezable flashlight, projecting a diamond that cuts the document into neat slivers. Slowly, she traces her finger over each word. Their meanings sink and dissolve as she reads, as the little light quivers. In the matter of the custody of, and there she sees her own full name, the middle cut down to an initial, the letter J like a little crooked star. A stranger's name grins up from the second paragraph. Someone called a court investigator. What does he want? Something about her mother's records. Something to do with mental health. An attempted something. She's never seen that word before. Looking long and sharp at once, but she knows instinctively that it's something awful, staring up with its two malicious eyes. A monster word. She wonders if it might be sin, spelled out. She thinks of her mother leaving so early, of the towering church, and wonders about penance. The light falls from her aching teeth and the words bleed back into shadow. She glances at the hospital bracelet, dangling over her own tiny wrist. The ugly word, an S word, is there too. The mother swears at the truck in front of her, at the priest behind his back, at the few hours she has left, unravelling like her snagged nylons. Why had she even gone? He offered her nothing, this man of God. Nothing but his Hail Marys and to go in peace. Didn't he understand? She had already tried that and failed. She slams her foot on the brake and her heel snaps. She pounds the steering wheel. Where was Mary, eternal mother, on that dark hour that still grips the wheel of her life? 9 years they had been married, and he simply stopped coming home. But one morning she found a post-it on the pillow and the closet half empty. Did God avert his eyes that day as she crawled to the bathroom, bruising her knees on all the unanswered prayers? She recognised Jesus in the bottles, filled like chalices, the red and white capsules, his blood and body hers to take, her own life in the offering plate. Nothing had ever been so clear, until that faraway voice darted through her storming mind, a little girl cry calling her back. It was for her daughter she gripped the toilet, forced a finger down her throat. It was out of desperate love that she allowed the white room, the stifling silence, the hospital robe that gaped at all the pointed questions, exposing her mercilessly. It was for her own little Christ that she turned away the lawyer, agreed he was a decent man. Hadn't he been a good father? Father of all she loved. But he spurned her, Mother Eternal, turned her away as a damaged sheep, left her like a leper. And now? How can they expect her to let her daughter go, to walk away alone? As she thinks of this, the road blurs, engulfed by sighing sky. It begins to rain. Wet moles mar the face of the document as the daughter cries. She tries to pronounce the word again and again through her tears, but nothing sounds right, and she chokes on fear. It is a word for secrets, for everything scary, for scars beneath the ugly stitches of her imagination. But there is a memory, soft and frayed as her favourite sleeping rabbit. She can still feel her face pressed to the gap in the bathroom door, eyeing her mother's hair spilled darkly across the tile. She remembers making some incoherent sound, and she feels it now, that wordless cry rising up once more. The front door slams. She cannot move, her hair caught in a spring. The mother limps across the room, shouting over the panicked cry. The daughter spies her mother's broken shoe at the bed's edge, the specks of rain that hold her own reflection, 1,000 tiny screams. The mother squeezes beneath the bed, sobbing as she frees her daughter. A little knot of hair rips out and is left behind, a snarl sacrificed. It hangs in the dark over the gaping box, like a silent star. Dust chokes the empty throat. Everything is scattered, a bracelet lost. The daughter, taller now, comes only so often, like a new moon. She keeps her face averted from the dark space under the bed, her mind still groping in the shadows, still struggling to put that terrible word back. But she knows the bent lid will never fit again, and the memory bloats in her mind. So she turns away from her mother's kiss, unconsciously rubbing her bare wrist raw. Christina Wotarczyk is an avid collector of odd trinkets and hopeful ever afters, still searching for her own in the high desert country of Wyoming, USA. She is the author of fairy tale retellings, ghost stories, poems, and other shorts, published through World Weaver Press and Sucker Literary. Follow her trail of crumbs on her website, Twice Upon a Time, at authorkw.wordpress.com. That's it for today, folks, but we'll be back in a fortnight. We promise we're not going to hibernate again for a while. We'll be back with more Words of Whimsy from under the bed and from our, by then, hot off the press issue, Between the Leaves. But maybe we'll see you before then. Do come over to Glasgow next week, 2 p.m, the old hairdressers. It's going to be wonderful. And if you can't make it, come up to St. Andrews for the Stanza Poetry Festival. It's a truly wonderful experience. We'll be at the Poets Market on Saturday the 8th, and we'll be waiting with cake. So, see you there.